The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
There are, of course, concerns among lawmakers, experts who've tracked this, saying previous arrivals of large numbers of refugees from different parts of the world, inevitably there may be a handful, small handful, who are eventually deemed a security risk of some kind. What reassurances can you make about the screening process and the attempts to make sure that somebody like that doesn't make his or her way here?
I can absolutely assure you that no one is coming into the United States of America who has not been through a thorough screening and background check process.
Videos coming out of places like Chicago. It makes me incredibly nervous that we're about to see people in law enforcement, people in uniform military get nervous, get stressed, shoot at American civilians. It is a very, very stressful situation for these law enforcement.
According to the National Fraternal Order of Police, as of October 31st, there have been 285 officers shot in the line of duty, 38 of them killed. There have been 58 ambush-style attacks against members of law enforcement during that time, including 19 of whom were killed. We've done a lot of reporting in this space, and we also know that the Department of Homeland Security has been sounding the alarm on this threat environment and law enforcement officials coming under a magnifying glass. From January 21st, 2024 through November 21st, 2024, there were just 19 reported assaults against ICE law enforcement. That same number 1 year later, 238 reported assaults.
Where a focus will turn to whether these guardsmen were specifically targeted. If that's the case, it would fit with what we've been hearing from law enforcement officials for a number of months now, that some political flashpoints in the country, whether that's immigration policies by the administration, the ongoing Israel-Hamas conflict, even amid a tenuous ceasefire, those kinds of flashpoints have made people in uniform, be they military, law enforcement, government officials, people in uniform, have increasingly been targets.
My great fellow Americans, earlier today, on the eve of the Thanksgiving holiday, two members of the National Guard serving in Washington, D.C., were shot at point-blank range in a monstrous ambush-style attack just steps away from the White House. They'd been deputized as part of the most successful public safety and national security mission in the history of our nation's capital, the D.C. Safe and Beautiful Task Force, which has achieved an unprecedented reduction in violent crime and crimes of all type. This heinous assault was an act of evil, an act of hatred, and an act of terror. It was a crime against our entire nation. It was a crime against humanity. The hearts of all Americans tonight are with those two members of the West Virginia National Guard and their families.
That far from being deterred, the commander-in-chief, our president, is sending 500 more troops to the city to show that no terrorism will sway us. And also having a conversation tonight with America, the conversation that we have to have with President Trump saying that Joe Biden, the Biden administration, the Democrats have inflicted on this nation the worst national security threat in our history. We've never faced a threat like this. 20 million people brought into our country from the most failed societies on earth, Afghanistan, Somalia, Libya, Iraq, brought here, no vetting, no conditions, no rules, brought here on visas, brought here as refugees, brought here as asylees, brought here as illegals, brought here in every way imaginable, by plane, train, bus, automobile, by land, by sea. For four straight years, they deluged this country. And now more blood is being spilled as a result. What you heard tonight from President Trump, the breaking news here tonight, is saying that his government is going to accelerate efforts to review every person added to this country over the last 20 years or the last 4 years, all 20 million. Now, obviously, if you're illegal, you're out automatically. But everybody else who was brought here, refugee, asylum status, whatever status, as he said, if you're not someone who loves this country, if you're not any benefit to this country, then we're going to send you out of this country.
August of 2021 is still relevant. It still comes up over and over in the news. You'll remember that shameful retreat, that shameful withdrawal from Afghanistan under the Biden administration, where they left in a hurry, where they left Bagram Air Base, where they left American soldiers defenseless. There was the terrorist attack that killed hundreds, that bombing just outside of the airport, the chaos that ensued, people holding on to those C-17s as they took off and then falling off of the plane, packing those C-17s with hundreds and hundreds of people in just days and shipping them where? To the United States of America. And like many people warned at the time, how can you possibly vet all of these people? How can you know who they are? How can you know where they've been or what their motives are, who they're associated with? And now one of them has shot two National Guardsmen. They have brought the war from the Middle East to the streets of the United States. There was that whole wing of the Republican Party years ago that said, we'll fight them over there so we don't have to fight them here. And now we have brought that war here. And it's not just this shooting, it's all over the United States. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I hope you're having a happy Thanksgiving. I wanted to cover some news at the start of the show. I know that's not the happiest news to begin with, but it is the reality of this world. It's the reality of the nation that you're living in. This Afghan national, he was brought over because of Biden's failure in Afghanistan. And you see just the reaction from the left, basically, and they've been against Donald Trump using the National Guard to clean up Washington, D.C. And a lot of their talking points revolve around, well, if the National Guard isn't there, well, they're not going to get shot. So just keep them off the streets. If ICE doesn't enforce the law, well, then members of ICE won't get assaulted. Just don't enforce the law and everybody will be safe. It reminds me a lot of that Hillary Clinton clip back in 2018 when she basically said, well, we can return to civility when Democrats are back in power. She said, you cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. That's why I believe if we are fortunate enough to win back the House and or the Senate, that's when civility can start again. But until then, the only thing that Republicans seem to recognize and respect is strength. So keep attacking. Cause chaos in the streets. Cause bloodshed in the streets. Don't enforce the law. Those two guardsmen who were attacked, they were shot at, they were targeted by this Afghan national who's been over here for 3 or 4 years, who knows how many more there are like him. But there's just so much about, so many things going all the way back to 2001 that were wrong about the way that this was handled. But at the end of the day, when you get to 2021, you could at least say, well, let's just keep a small presence in Afghanistan. That way we don't have to ship over 150,000 people. And it really doesn't take a whole lot. You read about the British Empire. It doesn't take a lot of people to bring stability to these nations. And the United States was already there. They'd been there for 20 years. And people will argue, oh, it's so expensive. And now it's all in vain, totally in vain. But now you look at, well, the welfare state, you look at Medicaid, Medicare, you talk about the refugees that come over and get these things for free. In just 1 year, it's $3-5 trillion annually for, I think it was just Medicaid, or maybe a combination of the both of Medicaid and Medicare. And Afghanistan was what, $1 trillion over 20 years? And then you talk about being a colonizer, well, you can't bring that up. Well, what about educating? What about teaching a nation? America spent its strength in vain. And now we have this war in the streets of the United States, just a couple blocks northwest of the White House. These guardsmen, not in Kabul, not in Islamabad, not in Damascus or any other city in the Middle East, in Washington, D.C., are being attacked by the Muslim terrorists. Not the Bee. This is the news aspect or the news wing of the Babylon Bee. Said the left labeled Charlie Kirk a fascist and he got shot. The left labeled the National Guard deployments as fascist. It wasn't hard to guess what would come next. And basically the left-wing reaction to this is if, well, they just shouldn't be there and then everybody will be safe. Never mind how many terrorist attacks are carried out against civilians. And go back, I feel like we always have to make the January 6th comparison because Democrats loved they loved troops in the streets of Washington, D.C. following January 6th. You weren't allowed to protest. You didn't have the freedom to assemble in those days following January 6th. That city was on lockdown. There were 10-foot-tall fences with razor wire on the top. You couldn't go to see the fake president of the United States get inaugurated because there were 10,000 troops guarding the way with fences. And there was no talk of, well, we're putting their lives at risk to have them out there. And then when President Trump does it to bring some stability and security to the Capitol, because the Washington, D.C. mayor will not let that happen. He is attacked relentlessly. The Trump administration is rightly so lashing out and responding strongly to this incident. They're going back. This was from the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. They said, effective immediately, processing of all immigration requests relating to Afghan nationals is stopped indefinitely pending further review of security and vetting protocols. The protection and safety of our homeland and of the American people remains our singular focus and mission. A lot of other people were commenting on how can we stop talking about Israel and the Jews and start addressing this actual threat that is in the United States? Can we talk about how Islam does not function under the U.S. Constitution? How that those two cannot exist together, and yet millions of Muslims are being allowed in, and they're allowed. You see it in England; they set up their own communities where Sharia law reigns. Associated Press, well, they just give some more details about the shooter, and again, I think one of the National Guardsmen that came and stopped the shooter, he didn't even have a gun. So some of these National Guardsmen are having to keep the city, just their presence is meant to secure the city. But this guardsman that initiated or stopped the attacker, he had to go at him with a knife until another guardsman with a gun was able to stop him, shoot him. But I think the attacker is still alive. John Ratcliffe, this is the director of the CIA, says that this Afghan national did actually work with the CIA in Afghanistan. And again, so what? I mean, anybody can give a tip. Anybody can say something. It doesn't mean they should get a free pass in the United States. Keep that culture over there, so to speak. Just keep a couple hundred U.S. soldiers at Bagram Air Base and watch how much stability that brings to that nation. But we see this culture clash. We see blood being spilled in U.S. cities. And there are a lot of U.S. cities where, and we've commented on this, we've made this point for decades, a lot of U.S. cities, the death toll is higher than it is in a lot of these war zones. It's more dangerous to be a U.S. citizen in the south side of Chicago than it is to be a soldier in Afghanistan. And you look again at just how much division there is in the United States. You look at just going back to those Democrats who said, don't obey any unlawful orders. Clearly a call for them to defy the president of the United States, the commander in chief. And they said, well, what's wrong with just saying we're you shouldn't obey an unlawful order? And then President Trump says all he does is simply tweet, sedition and treason, or the punishment for that used to be the death penalty. Just stating it, I guess, just like the Democrats stated, don't obey a lawful order. President Trump just says sedition, the punishment for sedition and treason is the death penalty. And they go crazy. Well, Donald Trump's calling for us to be killed. Okay, so does that mean you know you're committing sedition and treason by calling for people to disobey lawful orders? And there's a lot of dark money involved here. There was this billboard that was put up in Fayetteville, North Carolina. It said, did you go airborne? This is talking to troops, talking to members of the Air Force and the military. Did you go airborne just to pull security for ICE? And then they have a website link under the billboard that basically tells them, you know, here's the path for getting out of these things. But that you follow the link, and one person on Twitter was pointing this out. Okay, go to that website. I wish I printed the picture a little bit bigger. It says, you saw the billboard. You have questions. You're not alone. But first, here are proactive steps you can take to reduce risk. Be sure to access resources from a personal device, not a military or government computer, email account, phone, or Wi-Fi network. Use an encrypted Proton email account. Use the Signal app for encrypted texts and calls. Use a virtual private network, VPN. Basically telling U.S. troops, well, here's how you get around oversight from your superiors. Who's setting all that up? Look at the state of this nation. So many people living within it hate this country, hate the U.S. Constitution, want it fundamentally transformed. I think it was Mark Levin who said it years ago. Why would you want to fundamentally transform something that you love? If you love this country, if you love the Constitution, why would you want to fundamentally transform it? And we see this nation being fundamentally transformed. There's the pushback, there's the resurgence, there's Jeroboam holding it back, God using him to hold back the radical left takeover, Hillary Clinton winning in 2016. But you see that push. You see it with immigration, bringing in 20 million that we know of who don't adhere to the laws of this nation, who have a culture and an ideology that is anti-American. So many people just, they want to come over and either mooch off of the United States or completely destroy it. I mean, both of those things lead to the same result. And that, again, just you get into Thanksgiving, you get into just being grateful for what we have in this nation. You look at the blessings of this country, and it's no wonder so many people want to come to the United States. And why is it under attack? I mean, these are fundamental questions you have to ask. And the book that I really wanted to push and promote today, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, a lot of people, rightly so, talk about how blessed this nation is. And they go back to the founding fathers and they talk about how industrial the American people were. But in The United States and Britain in Prophecy explains the real source of those blessings, why our people have been blessed, and why those blessings are disappearing. But this is really, it is a great holiday. It is a day, well, I shouldn't even call it a holiday. It's a day, every day should be Thanksgiving. Every day should be a day where you're thankful for what you have. And it's funny, though, you look at this day and it seems like every year this is the day that comes under attack. I think it's Columbus Day and Thanksgiving. This is where all of the sad, depressed, miserable liberals come out and say, those are horrible, oppressive days. And every time I think, well, why don't they talk about, if you want to get so much into the origins of some of these days, try Halloween, try Christmas, try Easter. But they come after the day where we just try to have unity and be grateful for what we have. I played a few of these videos a couple of years ago. I think I had the show on Thanksgiving as well. And they, I like them. I don't, totally know every detail of this history, but it is helpful to just go back and learn some of this history. These videos were produced by PragerU. And the first one that I'll play for you is What's the Truth About the First Thanksgiving? Another aspect of what makes these helpful is we do have an international audience, and this is an American day. But again, like I said, it's a day, it should be every day. We should be thankful every day. But just to have one day where the nation is united in gratitude is something special. And I think that these videos do bring that out. So we could go ahead and play the first one. It's about 5 minutes long. And again, this is titled, What's the Truth About the First Thanksgiving? This is clip three.
Food, football, and oppression. That's what Thanksgiving has come to mean to many Americans. Back in 2007, Seattle public school officials made national news by describing the holiday as a time of mourning and a bitter reminder of 500 years of betrayal. This new narrative describes the pilgrims as arrogant oppressors who fled persecution only to become persecutors themselves, depriving Native Americans of their land and their lives. But this is wrong on every count. First of all, the pilgrims didn't cross the ocean to flee persecution or even England. They'd been living for over a decade in Holland, Europe's most tolerant nation and a haven for religious dissenters. Free from interference by the Church of England, they feared seduction, not persecution, worrying that their children would be corrupted by the materialistic Dutch culture. That's why they risked their dangerous 1620 voyage to a wilderness continent, not because they were running from oppression, but because they were running toward holiness, fulfilling a fateful mission to build an ideal Christian commonwealth. They initially planned to plant this model society on the wild, wolf-infested island known to natives as Manhattan. But winds and tides blew them 250 miles off course, dumping the Mayflower on the frozen coast of Massachusetts. Somehow, the pilgrims saw their dire situation as a demonstration of providential power, especially after a giant wave picked up the flimsy boat of a scouting party on a stormy December night. The turbulent sea then deposited them safely, miraculously, on a little island within sight of the ideal location for their settlement. It was a deserted Indian village with cleared land, stored supplies of corn, and a reliable source of fresh water. No, these supposedly cruel conquerors never actually invaded that village. Instead, they expressed a fervent desire to pay the natives for the dried corn they found, if only they could find someone to pay. But the former inhabitants had perished during 3 years of plague, probably smallpox, that immediately preceded the pilgrims' arrival. One of the few survivors of that devastation turned up several months later to welcome the English newcomers. Against all odds, he proved to be the single human being on the continent best suited to help the struggling settlers, since he spoke English and had already embraced Christianity. His name was Squanto, and he had grown up in this very village before a ruthless sea captain kidnapped him as a boy and sold him into slavery in Spain. After 4 years, he was freed by kindly monks, then made his way to England, and finally sailed across the Atlantic, only to find his friends and family all wiped out by disease. Over the next few months, Squanto helped the English newcomers plant crops and negotiate a friendly trade agreement with the region's most important chief, Massasoit. No wonder Pilgrim leader William Bradford called Squanto a special instrument sent of God for their good. The celebration, later known as the First Thanksgiving, actually involved a three-day harvest festival in October, apparently inspired by the biblical holiday of Sukkot, or the Feast of Tabernacles. 90 hungry Indian warriors joined the 53 surviving pilgrims for this occasion. Nearly half of the colonists had died during the brutal winter. The Englishmen provided some vegetables, fish, and perhaps wild turkeys, while the natives brought 5 recently hunted deer as house gifts. The preferred sport on this occasion wasn't football, but shooting, with settlers and Indians sharing a fierce fascination with guns. Though these hardy pilgrims loomed large in the American imagination, they never built their Plymouth settlement into a major colony. And nearby Boston, the later colony of Massachusetts Bay grew so much faster that it swallowed up the great-grandchildren of the pilgrims in 1691. But the sense of purpose of the original pilgrims left a permanent imprint on the national character. They maintained unshakable confidence that God protected them, not to grant special privileges, but to impose special responsibilities. They saw themselves as instruments, not authors, of a mysterious master plan. Today, with our continued blessings so obvious and so overwhelming, the only reason to treat this beloved national holiday as a time of mourning is that some foolish Americans actually think that's a good idea. The pilgrims knew better. They understood that people of every culture and every era can gain more from gratitude than from guilt.
It's a fantastic little video. And I love just the acknowledgement of miracles. Those little miracles, like how they're off course landing on this other area that they didn't mean to, and that happens to be where the only English-speaking Indian is. And this is 100 years or so before the United States is formally founded, I think a little longer than that. But you see God laying the groundwork for these nations, just like Mr. Fleury's talked about the British Empire and Shakespeare and Queen Elizabeth in the 1500s laying the groundwork for that great empire. And a nation that was a Christian nation that acknowledged God's hand in its founding. And you have to ask, well, why was God doing that? Why? You have to say that about all of the, you have to acknowledge the miracle and you have to say, okay, now why would God do that? What does God want us to learn? What is God doing here? And God was working out for the 2,520 year time span to be fulfilled for the blessings of Abraham to come about. You can read it in the United States and Britain in Prophecy, a book that we should be very thankful for because it explains world news. It helps you understand this world and it helps you understand why those miracles. What was God trying to work out? And you see the only nation to have freedom of religion, you get, go fast forward a few hundred more years, you get to this only nation where God's church could grow and thrive because of that. You look at the work that Mr. Armstrong, that God built up through Mr. Armstrong. But again, every year people just look at this day and it's about the physical aspects of it. And again, we do need to be thankful for those physical details. We need to be thankful for all of the gifts that God has given us. But we have to go beyond that and ask those deeper questions, those spiritual questions. I had one more video that I was going to play, but I don't think I need to get into it. If you want to, you can watch it on your own time. It's another video from PragerU. And it's titled Lincoln and Thanksgiving, The Origin of an American Holiday. And it just is a neat little video because it talks about how every area had their day of Thanksgiving, but there wasn't this unified day where the whole nation would come together. And Abraham Lincoln, in the midst of the Civil War, said, this is really what the United States needs. We need something that we can rally around. And gratitude is something we can rally around. And he described how blessed this nation was. He described all of the things that America had been given and acknowledged that it wasn't because we did anything special. It was a gift from God. Again, look at this nation today. Look at, like we've explained on this show, Leviticus 26. Deuteronomy 28. God gives all of those blessings, but he also, and those blessings prove the descendants of ancient Israel, prove who they are, prove that they're the United States and Britain. And those curses also prove who these nations are. In 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 3, Paul describes the condition of the last days, the days before Christ's return. And he says, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good." That's the condition of our nation. And when people are grateful for something, it really does just revolve around the physical. This article by Martin Bowdry is titled "The Ingratitude of the Well-Fed." He says, "People everywhere like to complain about their life, but only free societies offer abundant opportunities to do so with impunity." You have the blessings to be able to complain, because a lot of people are just struggling to get food, or they're struggling just to stay warm. But we have so much that we actually have the liberty, so to speak, to complain. And that leads, ironically, to the removal of those blessings. He writes, "As a result of this asymmetry, free societies become victims of their own success, subject to relentless self-criticism in a way that unfree societies largely are not." There's nothing wrong with having those physical things. God gives them. But what's the attitude like? That's the all-important question. Where do these blessings come from? Why are you given blessings? And there's a huge failure to appreciate what America has been given. And when you start to appreciate it, when you see it, again, like I said, that should lead to you asking more questions. Why the United States and Britain, instead of what other or some other random country? Why these nations? And you just have to acknowledge the truth of the Bible. I've always thought it was just interesting in those verses in 2 Timothy 3 that it has disobedient to parents, and then right after that, unthankful. And this is really something that has affected the younger generations. Generations who've been given a lot of things, a lot of prosperity, but weren't taught to be thankful. And that thankful mind is going to be a humble mind, and a humble mind is going to obey parents. And that has to be taught. You have to be brought up in a home that teaches gratitude. For the rest of the show, I did want to just spend some time talking about the younger generations in the United States. And for a lot of young people, there's a lot of complaining. And it's something that is a massive problem. The American dream is disappearing. There's an active plot to wipe out the middle class of the United States, because that is where the power is. Home prices skyrocketing. Just how many things are so much more expensive? And that shouldn't be happening. And that is a curse. But at the same time, the amount of blessings that we have are immense. I think about that almost every time I get into my car, and I have a heater in my car. I can drive somewhere in the cold and stay warm. My 2003 Honda Odyssey is a nicer mode of transportation than any great emperor in history has ever used. It's fantastic. And children need to be taught to just be thankful for all of these little things that they're given. I tell my boys that all the time. When you pray, just thank God that you wake up in the morning. Because breathing is a miracle. It's incredible how God designed the human body to use oxygen. If you have time to study that, look into that. And you can only go barely a minute without oxygen, and then you cease to exist. All of these little things that we should just be taught to be thankful for. And again, that helps create humility. Think about just even how David would just look up at the stars and say, "What is man that you're mindful of him? We're just dust. We're dirt." I explained that to my boys as well. So why do we eat food? Well, food comes from the garden, and ideally it would. But at every stage, it's coming from dirt, and it's this process that God created, another miracle, where this seed is warmed up, it takes nutrients from the air, from sunlight, uses that as energy, and processes nutrients in the dirt, and then we eat that, and it prolongs our experience as human beings, this tabernacle that is made of dust. That's incredible. One of my favorite clips, I should have brought it, but it was that old veteran, and he was crying because of just how many people are upset with this nation and how it's just more and more and more. We need the government to do this for us. We need this taken care of for us. And if we don't get that, well, we're gonna burn down cities. And that old man was just like, there's so much to be thankful for. And he talked about just going outside and appreciating plants and flowers, watching a sunset, looking up at night and realizing how little and puny you are. There's so much to be thankful for that doesn't require money, that God has just given us, that He surrounds us with things. I mean, His name is in all of that creation. Again, that gets back to the attitude and what's being taught and being trained to be grateful. One article, I've got just a few that I was going to go through that do kind of just highlight problems that young people in the United States are facing and dealing with. There's this article, it's titled, "Buy Now, Pay Later is More Dangerous Than Ever." And this is started a few years ago, where you can basically finance small purchases. You go to Taco Bell and it's a $12 meal, and you have the option to spread that payment out over four payments throughout the month. So it can be $2 instead of the lump sum of $10. And this article points out how this is becoming a huge problem for young people because it's so easy to do it. And then it just stacks up, and it's not treated the same way as a regular loan would be. I don't know how it could be. I mean, can you imagine having to get a credit score check so you could finance a $12 meal at a fast food place? But they were talking about how this is just leading to this huge bubble where there's a lot of unpaid debt. And then these companies that offer these payment plans repackage this debt and sell it somewhere else. And they're comparing it to the housing bubble in 2008, not nearly the level of that, but it gets up into the $10-20 billion range, where just these tiny little products are being financed, paid on these monthly or monthly installments. And they said, well, where are these, or why are they being taught to do that? Why is it made so easy? But again, it just reminded me of how many things need to be taught. How many things need to be explained? And it's just at its surface, I mean, I see these things come up all the time. You can go to the store, you want to spread that over 4 months or 4 weeks, and I just chuckle. But a lot of people do it. And again, so many young people are just kind of taught, well, this is the system. You're going to have to go into debt. You've got to go to the college and spend $120,000. And you've got to graduate with the equivalent of a home loan. There are these finance videos. This guy, he works for Dave Ramsey. And he goes around and he asks younger people, how much debt do you have? And without fail, it's very rare when there's someone that isn't over $50,000, $60,000 in debt. Again, this is about more than just physical money and finances. We need to be grateful for what we have, not being spoiled and wanting more all the time, using wisdom. But you just see in so many aspects of society where things are breaking down. This next article, it's from the Wall Street Journal. Millions of kids are on ADHD pills. For many, it's the start of a drug cascade. This article is so incredibly sad. And a lot of these kids, there's the parenting aspect of it, but then a lot of these kids, they're foster kids, or they don't have parents. And these teachers and the foster parents, they're trying to take care of them and can't get them under control. So in every instance, they go to the doctor and they say, well, how do I manage this? And they're prescribed drugs, basically to sedate them. This one girl, she was just 7 years old, and her teachers were upset with the way she was behaving. I think she had a single mom, not in a married household. And this mom was just paranoid about her daughter being kicked out of school. So she succumbed to the pressure from the school and took her to a psychiatrist who inevitably prescribed, I think it was Ritalin or Adderall. And this girl said, it's this cascading thing where once you start one of these drugs, you can't sleep, or it causes stress in another area. And they said, once you go back to the doctor, they prescribe another drug for you. And this girl, she's giving her story. She's a seven-year-old. By the time the story's being written, she's 30. She's finally gotten off all of these things, but she said at one point she was on 14 or 15 different drugs. They never really taught how to have emotional maturity or manage those impulses. A lot of articles talking about how this is just a huge experiment by these drug companies, by the experts on young people. And you think about just the blessing of a home life, the way it's described in the Bible, with a mother and a father, a married mother and father, a husband and wife who love one another and are trying to expand the God family with children. What a blessing that is in so many different ways. These drug companies, though, there's no money to be made in that. There's no money to be made in teaching proper parenting. There's no money to be made in the Child Rearing with Vision booklet. And it's this big experiment. This article talks about, I think it's like hundreds of thousands of children in the United States that are put on these drug regimens as three-year-olds. Where are the parents? Where is the authority in the home? I've been going through this book on and off. It's titled Bad Therapy. And it's written by a woman who really just, she didn't like the way her parents did things for her. Her name's Abigail Schreier. And she said, well, she took a different approach with her kids. And she didn't like the results. And she was going to therapists and they were telling her, do this with the child, do this. And she didn't like the results of that and finally realized, you know, this, we have to get away from the experts, get away from the psychologists and the drugs, let children, you know, or teach children, have some authority in the home. Stop depriving them of opportunities. Stop coddling them. Stop telling them that everything they do is exactly the right thing. And one point she gets at is, as a parent, you're an example to that child. You're giving them something to aspire to. But if as the parent, you're just trying to affirm everything the little child does, well, then that turns the child into a god. I'll play the clip for you in a minute. And then the child is basically just looking to themselves as the authority. And so are the parents. It's a really fascinating clip. I don't agree with everything that she's written, but at least she is exposing a lot of rottenness in this culture. This is, again, she was on a podcast, and again, scripture should just immediately pop into your mind when you hear this clip. This is, again, her name is Abigail Schreier. This is clip two.
when parents were felt comfortable being authorities in their own home with their own kids, there was something for kids to aspire to. But through this gentle parenting, the therapist-led parenting that we're seeing, where the role of the parent is really to be an empath, to feel a child's pain and to adjust and accommodate it, there's nothing for a child to graduate to. It doesn't look so great to be a child's slave. And that's what parents have become.
A child's slave. Immediately, Isaiah 3 pops into mind. Isaiah 3 and verse 12. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths. Children are their oppressors. And she gets some things right, but she gets a lot of things wrong as well, because this is just a world cut off from God. I see clips like that, and I hear a bit of it that's right, and then there's a lot that's totally wrong. And that makes me very thankful for Mr. Armstrong. That makes me very thankful for Matthew 17, verse 11, and truth being restored. Makes me very thankful for Mr. Gerald Fleury, who fought to keep that truth alive, so that we can know the way, we can know how to live according to the Bible. Another article, this is about, again, just how much young people are being coddled because they don't want to be told that they're wrong, or they don't want to be pressed, or they don't want to be pushed to do something they don't want to do. This article is titled A Recipe for Idiocracy. It's from The Atlantic. It says, for the past several years, America has been using its young people as lab rats, and ties into the previous article we were reading, using young people as lab rats in a sweeping, if not exactly thought out, education experiment. Schools across the country have been lowering standards and removing penalties for failure. The results are coming into focus. Well, we'll just make it easier, and if we make it easier, they get better grades, and if they get better grades, we get more funding. They talk, or I'll just continue reading. 5 years ago, about 30 incoming freshmen at UC San Diego arrived with math skills below high school level. According to a recent report from UC San Diego faculty and administrators, that number is more than 900 now, and most of those students don't fully meet middle school math standards. Many struggle with fraction. Well, they just talk about how math is a huge problem at these schools because a lot of them just rely on, they're plugging the equations into artificial intelligence. And they're not being taught how to do basic math. So they're failing these grades, but then the administration just says, well, make it easier. And, you know, let them use it. It says, one of the course's tutors noted that students faced more issues with logical thinking than with math facts per se. You see, math is logical. There's logic to it. You learn math, it helps you learn how to think through other situations. The Atlantic says they didn't know how to begin solving word problems. And they say this is basically affecting all of these science, technology, what are the STEMs? Science, technology, engineering, and math, or something like that. They're saying these are the ones where you'd think you really want the people that are going to become engineers to know math. But the way they're being pushed through the system, they're graduating without really understanding what they're doing, because they're so reliant on the technology to take care of it for them. And it's dangerous because they're put in positions, again, where people's lives are in their hands. This article says, together, these changes meant that even as students' math preparation was stagnating, their grades were going up. The UC San Diego report notes that more than a quarter of the students who placed into the elementary and middle school level remedial course last year had earned straight A's in their high school math classes. Almost all of them had taken advanced math courses in high school. So they get straight A's in all the advanced math classes, but then when they're tested on elementary and middle school level math at college, they can't do it. The article goes on, the other academics I spoke with tended to agree. Who is going to trust somebody who got a degree in airline engineering who doesn't know how to think through a problem without a computer telling them the answer? This is quoting from one of the math professors. They said, the premise that foundational ideas don't need to be learned anymore is a recipe for idiocracy. That foundational ideas don't need to be learned. Use the technology. It can, in some ways, make things faster. But I think in many ways, it's just the opposite is happening. That convenience is making it more dangerous. It's not an advancement. It's not progress. They're not learning how to do things the right way. They've lost the foundation. And they have nothing to stand on. There was this, I meant to include the article in my notes, but it was this article and the guy was asking ChatGPT, one of these AI bots, if you were the devil, how would you take control? And it talked about going after the minds of, it was gross, going after the minds of children. And it explained how it would do it in a subtle way so that they wouldn't even know it was happening, how they'd actually want it to happen and desire it is disgusting, but it was the mind of the devil. And basically the conclusion that it got to was, I would give every child a smartphone. Give the kids smartphones because now that AI is with them all the time and they're not taught how to think. They can't do things for themselves. There's plenty of articles that talk about the anxiety that comes, even from adults, when they don't have that device with them. Again, all of these things should make us thankful for the truth. Make us thankful for the Bible. Make you thankful for God's system of education, for Armstrong College. Like I said, thankful for these books and booklets that are given away for free that teach and explain the way, a way of life. Mr. Hilliker had in the opening of his trumpet brief this morning, says, gratitude means looking at something in your life with fresh eyes, that is seeing the value of a prize you already possess, the beauty in a treasure you already have. It is truly a prerequisite to happiness. And then he goes through just a few verses. The Bible, that's another theme of the Bible, is gratitude, being thankful for what God has given. I'll play one final clip. This is from Mr. Armstrong in, I think it's a World Tomorrow program in the 1980s, but he talks about those verses in 2 Timothy. This is clip one.
All right, now I want you to notice next in 2 Timothy. Wherefore, Paul says to Timothy, and this is the letter of Paul, and this is the Apostle Paul's writing, but it's for us today. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. In other words, people would hire teachers, the people themselves wanting their ears tickled with things that please them. And they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. Now, has that happened? Paul says the time will come when this will happen, when the people will be turned to fables and when the devil will have deceived all nations, the whole world. Has it happened? Or does your Bible mean what it says, and are the prophecies true? Now over here in the third chapter of 2 Timothy, this know also that in the last days, and certainly that's where we are today, in the last days perilous times shall come. Men shall be lovers of their own selves. Now no real Christian is that. Covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents. Oh, how much of that we find today. Unthankful. The most probably, I won't say definitely, but I believe it's very probable that the most prolific sin today, the most widespread sin today, is unthankfulness, lack of gratitude, ingratitude. Are you thankful for what you have, or do you gripe and grumble because of what you think you don't have that you want? Oh, my friends, we need to stop and think. Yes, unthankful. Are you?
I was going through, I was just trying to find it. I think it's in 2 Corinthians when Paul lists all of the tests and the trials that he's gone through, and he's making a point. He's not complaining about it. He's just saying, look at all of these things I've experienced, and just going through the physical aspects of that. The wonderful thing about the truth and knowing the truth is that all of those physical things can be taken away and you still have God's truth. Always be grateful for that. I was flipping over trying to find that verse, and 1 Timothy 2 talks about a sound mind. I think it's 2 Timothy 1. Yet, for God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. God has given us that. God can give you that. It's something to be thankful for every single day. Mr. Hilliker says, a lot of research shows that deliberately practicing thankfulness has measurable positive effects on mental and physical health. Activities like regularly writing down things you're thankful for boost happiness, reduce symptoms of sickness, improve sleep quality, increase relationship satisfaction and connection, and train your brain to become more sensitive to positive experiences. Just think about how much different all of these troubled young people would be if we were just taught gratitude and humility, to look at all of those little things and just to be grateful for what God has given. I'll conclude with Mr. Hilliker's trumpet brief. Considering how good gratitude is for us, it's no wonder the loving God commands it. Over and again, the Bible tells us, be you thankful, in everything give thanks. Make every prayer with thanksgiving. Give thanks always for all things. We should be abounding with thanksgiving, praising God continually. That is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to His name. We heard a message about boasting about the great things that God has done. And we have so many things to be thankful for. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. Thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of The Trumpet Daily, and we will see you again tomorrow.